Hey, what's up? Quick note about today's show. I recorded it in the field at Sharon's studio where she teaches Alexander Technique. So you will hear the sounds of reverberation in a nice open studio space, as well as the sounds of, the neighborhood, a garbage truck backing up, a little bit of construction work going on next door. Just a little bit. It's there. I wanted to call it out so you know that I knew it was there, but it certainly isn't too much to stop you from getting a ton out of this fantastic conversation about Alexander Technique, about the work that Sharon does, and about how it can benefit you as a voiceover person. Enjoy! What's up, what's up? Welcome to another episode of All Over VoiceOver with Kiff VH. I'm your host, Kiff VH, and I'm thrilled to be joined today by, my teacher, my Alexander Technique instructor, and friend. We just met doing a workshop. Sharon Jacobisi Clem, welcome.
Thank you so much. Hi, thank you so much. So happy to be on your podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing it. I mean, we met... It was maybe 3 weeks ago, is that right? Or was it 2 weeks? I forget exactly when it was.
It was October 6th.
So then it was two.
Yeah.
And it was a spectacular day. Where are you from originally?
I am born and raised L.A. Uh-huh. I grew up in the Valley, so I'm a Valley girl. Oh, my God. So I grew up in Sherman Oaks, Van Nuys, and then I went to UCSD where I studied dance and cognitive science.
What's cognitive science?
I would say it's the study of like brain and behavior.
Okay.
And how certain brain injuries impact behavior, so you can find out what brain areas are in charge of what functions.
What brought you into that field? That combination, dance and that.
It makes seems so like an much interesting. Sense.
It's a like wild so double sense. Major. Like
yeah, it makes so much sense. I originally wanted to be like a neuroscientist or a neurosurgeon.
Wow.
Because I was really interested in the brain and behavior, and then I had a fine arts requirement. And we were looking at all the options, and then I saw modern dance, and I was like, oh, I gotta do modern dance. So I signed up for my first class, did my first piece of choreography, like starting immediately, and got an award for it.
Oh, wow.
And it was set to Ministry and Pink Floyd.
That's awesome.
And then I was looking at psychology as one option, but then I heard about the cognitive science department, and I was just immediately intrigued because they look at AI, artificial intelligence, they look at modeling the brain, and I also study neuroscience, so I just jumped on into cognitive science.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So that those two, the combination of like, how does the brain and behavior work together, and then dance and movement.
I think I can make some sort of guesses at how they're connected, but what discoveries did you make in terms of how those two things really merge?
Well, really, I mean, our nervous system is actually designed not for us to think. Our nervous system is really designed for us to move in order to get food and to survive.
Huh.
If we can't move, we die.
Yeah.
We can't get food. And I mean, I just took, movement to the biggest, fullest expression through dance and modern dance.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. So Alexander Technique actually makes perfect sense.
It really does. Coming from that background, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
So you finish college. Mm-hmm. Where do you go after that?
I started working as a behavioral therapist for kids with autism. And during that time, I was also doing choreography and performance as like a side passion.
Yeah.
But I was in excruciating hip and low back pain. So I think the combination of whatever, you know, my postural habits, and then sitting in little itty bitty chairs with little kids.
Oh man, yeah.
And then dancing on top of that, my low back, my hip were like, this is not good, this hurts.
It was like you're going from one extreme to the other, like this compression of being bent over and then this explosion of physical movement.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. And it's funny because another dancer at the time said, oh, you should try Alexander technique. And I took one lesson. And in that one single lesson, it felt like my body disappeared. Because I associated my body with pain. And I was like, what in the world is this? I don't have any pain and I always have pain.
Man alive.
Yeah. And so I kept taking lessons. And about 2 months into the taking lessons, I felt like my ability to handle stress, because working with kids with autism is really stressful.
Yeah.
My ability to handle stress was so much better. I felt calmer and I didn't have as much pain. And that's when I knew I've got to share this with the world.
Hmm. That's fantastic. That's great. And then there's like, is there a certification? Like, do you go to the institute or you go to the mountain? You know, like,
the mountain happens to be in Santa Monica.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
There
no
is the Alexander Training Institute of LA is in Santa Monica.
Uh-huh.
And it's a 3-year, 1,600-hour training program to be certified as an Alexander Technique teacher.
I see.
There are schools all over the world.
Uh-huh.
But that's the only one in Los Angeles.
I see.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. What is... How would you define the Alexander technique? And I think that's what brought me to you was like, oh, I wanna. I had a smattering of it with Terry Notary, and like just the impact of that process was mind blowing. I was like, I want to know more about it, and that was how we found you. So like, how would you define what Alexander technique is?
I would say that it is. We could call it a mind body modality. That really helps you to heighten your kinesthetic awareness, your body awareness, so that you can recognize unconscious, unnecessary habits of tension and collapse in the body.
Uh-huh.
And then you learn how to communicate with the body differently. We describe it as directing the body so that you are more lengthened, more open, there's more space for the movement of breath, more ease, and it's just easier to move, to breathe, to speak when unconscious habit becomes conscious and then you can learn how to release it.
Man alive, that's great. There's so much to unpack, in that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, to define something as a modality begins that journey of starting to figure out, what am I doing? How do I transform what I'm doing to support my life?
Yeah. And usually people find me through some sort of pain, whether it is physical pain, sometimes it's anxiety and nerves, sometimes it's the loss of the voice.
Huh.
So there's some sort of pain and they try everything. And then finally, here's a funny story.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people have taken Alexander Technique in college.
Uh-huh.
And then 20 years later, they're like, I remember how good I felt. And now I'm in pain. I need to find an Alexander teacher.
Fascinating.
So it's happened so many times.
It's so true. Like that was Sherry's situation of like, I had one class and it wasn't necessarily explained properly. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, it's put into that space of like, oh, you get a little bit of this, a taste of this work.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh wow, look, I feel so connected to my body.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, that's fantastic. So how do you feel? I mean, specifically since my audience is generally voiceover actors, how do you see the benefits of that in particular manifesting in vocal strength, help, vocal health, character, those kind of things?
Oh, it's so impactful because obviously you and your audience have heard your body is your instrument. And so if there is unconscious compression in the neck, tightness in the shoulders, collapse in the chest and the sternum, a general pushing down through the body, that makes it so much harder for you to produce sound.
So when I'm gonna explode what you're talking about. So like compression in the throat.
Yeah.
How would you define that? Like what is compression in the throat?
There are a couple of different ways it can manifest, but it's very related to the relationship of the head to the spine.
Okay.
So for a lot of people, they'll relax, which is actually more of a collapse into a slouch.
Like I'm doing right now. So like, exactly. Like I'm I got my legs spread wide, but I'm kind of leaning over like there's a C in my spine if you were looking at me from sideways.
Yeah, and then to look at me, you have to lift the mask of your face, and that's compressing the back of the neck. But it's also bending your windpipe.
Hmm.
So in order to produce sound, you have to work much harder to send the air past your vocal folds. Huh. And then your voice is vibration. Your voice is vibration, and tension smothers vibration.
Hmm.
So tension in the neck, because the vocal folds are in the throat, tension in the neck smothers the vibration of your voice.
Yeah.
Tension in the shoulders and the chest and the abdominal wall smothers the vibration of your voice.
So the more I'm leaning over and creating that tension,
I can hear your voice right away. I can hear a little bit of the sound as soon as you lean forward.
But when I lean back, like I'm doing right now against the back of the chair, mm-hmm. I can feel the openness in my entire sort of system from the bottom of my jaw
mm-hmm.
down through my sternum to the base of, to the top of where the diaphragm is.
Yeah, and I no longer hear that slightly, the beginning of a gravelly sound.
Huh.
Because now the throat is open and the windpipe is carrying the air past the vocal folds without any interference.
Huh. Fascinating.
Other examples though of compression in the neck and the throat are, you know, a lot of people have this habit, you know, we live in an overstimulated environment.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people are sort of existing with the arms and the shoulders lifted up towards the ears. That also compresses the neck. And then if you collapse and, you know, sort of pull in towards center.
As most people sitting inside of an audition, getting ready to go in.
Oh my gosh. All my clients. Uh-huh. I tell them, look at everybody else in the room when you're auditioning and don't do it. Don't do what they're doing.
Yeah.
Because they are literally compressing the whole instrument, and all of that compression and tension is smothering the vibration of their voice. So if you're sitting in the room and you're using the back of the chair, you're letting your upper arms rest at your sides, you're not crossing your legs, your instrument is already more suited to produce sound.
Hmm. That's great. All right. I said I was going to blow it out.
Okay.
So I did compression of the throat. What was the next thing that, like, then you mentioned the tension in the shoulders and then pushing that up and stifling that.
Yeah.
So one of the things that you talked about when we were in this workshop, and you blow everyone's minds with this, is the idea of what the diaphragm really is.
Mm-hmm.
And that all of us, there were like, what, 12 of us in the room?
Yeah.
All kind of assumed that the diaphragm is like a trampoline. But in reality, it's a bowl.
Yeah, it's an upside down bowl. And it is muscular and connective tissue. So it's pliable. It's not hard. You can imagine a jellyfish or a parachute.
Yeah.
And the action of the diaphragm is just as floaty as a jellyfish or a parachute. Your diaphragm does not work hard.
Hmm.
You don't want your diaphragm to work hard. You want your diaphragm to be free. Free movement of the diaphragm allows your diaphragm to support the demands of the moment, whether it's physical or vocal, or both.
That's so fascinating. One of the auditions I did after this work,
mm-hmm.
I found my speaking pattern almost to mimic. Do you remember when Christopher Reeve was connected to the breathing apparatus and he had to wait for his breath to come? It was, well, it's a really sad example that I just shared. It was that same sort of thing of like, rather than feeling like I needed to force myself to draw a big air to do a take, I relaxed and allowed my body to take in the breath She's cheering. Yes. And relaxed and let my body take in the breath as it needed it, when it needed it, and allowed me to then present the piece rather than get a big breath and, you know.
When you take a deep, big, deep breath before you produce sound, you go into what's called accessory breathing, where the neck and the shoulder and the chest muscles are doing the work for the diaphragm. Huh. And it's usually paired with a sound like a gasp.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When I listen to the radio, I always listen for that. And I'm like, this person needs me. And your body and your nervous system breathe better than you do. So if you're overriding your body and your nervous system and you're taking a big, deep breath, there's so much that's happening. You're using your neck, your shoulders, your chest to do the work of your diaphragm. But you're also most likely lifting the chest and compressing the back, where most of your lungs and most of your diaphragm are.
Which is, like, I'm shocked at how bad my knowledge of physiology is. You know, like that idea of, dude, your lungs are in back.
Yes.
Your, you know, your diaphragm is in back. That's where most of it lives. Yeah. And when
there is some in front, okay, but most of it's in the back.
And when you start to connect those thoughts in your mind to those pathways, like, what do you see as being the benefit? Why do you stress that?
Mm-hmm. Because then you, instead of locking up the back and trying to stand up straight like military posture, which actually locks up the back, you start to release the ribs and let the ribs move, which also allows the diaphragm to move and allows the lungs to receive air and release air. All of the tension of standing up straight and lifting the chest and the sternum, tension smothers vibration. So that tension is smothering the sound quality of your voice. And in fact, when you're really connected to your body and you're really at ease and loose in your body, your back becomes like a giant amplifier for your voice. Hmm. Your voice resonates in the ribs and your back.
Yeah.
And so when I'm working with my clients who want to tap into their real voice, I'll say, imagine a big mouth in your back. And imagine the sound coming out of your back. And it's like palpable, the change in their voice and how like everyone gets the chills. They're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. Oh, that's so great. That's so fascinating. Well, like, with that, like, how do you, what's the process of, I mean, I think I can sort of badly explain it, but I'd love to explore it with you of like, how do you use your mind to put your focus where your resonators are so that you can project out of your back in that way or change, be neutral so that you can create vocal sounds from different places for different characters.
Yeah, I would say first step is noticing habit. We cannot skip that. We all of us as humans want to jump to the solution. Yeah. But if you don't know your unconscious habit of maybe collapsing through the spine and the neck, or you don't know your habit of locking your legs and clenching your tush, or you don't know your habit of sucking in the stomach and lifting the chest, if you don't know your habit, the solution is pointless.
Yeah.
You have to study yourself first. You know, noticing what you're doing when you're driving in the car. You, like, armoring yourself with tension because everyone else is insane out there.
Right, right.
How do you protect yourself with tension? When you go into an audition, are you armoring yourself and locking up your upper back? You have to know yourself first. You have to know your habits first. And then, as you start to discover your own habitual way and voice, you know, we started using our voice when we were babies. And then there is some unconscious education about our voice, like you're too loud, you're not loud enough. Then we start to develop habits, physical habits that really impact our voice. So it's difficult for people to actually hear their own voices sometimes.
Yeah.
And with that awareness, starting with a sense of like, okay, what can I let go of? What can I release? In the Alexander technique process, I start a lesson by putting my hands on someone's head and neck. Because if the head and neck is compressed, you're not going to be able to release your abdominal wall. You're not going to be able to release your shoulders if the head and neck are tight and compressed. And that release and letting go in an upward direction through the head and neck actually allows the spine to follow. Spine follows the head. And there's a release to uprightness, which is very different than what our culture is telling us. That uprightness is hard work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for bringing that up. I want to bring that, you talk about releasing up. Yeah. And that idea was really, impactful. Mm-hmm. How do you manifest that releasing up? Do you have a trick for that or a thought?
Well, I mean, as an Alexander Technique teacher, I have to say, study Alexander Technique.
Yes.
You know, because the hands-on guidance is so trained. There isn't some, random person that took one Alexander Technique lesson that's going to be able to put their hands on you, that's going to help you release your neck in the same way that an Alexander Technique teacher is, because it's about subtraction.
Huh.
So when I put my hands on, I'm noticing the downward pulls through the body, and then I'm not pulling on someone's head.
Right, it's that like jaw traction.
Yeah, I'm not like come on, release your neck already.
Let's put tension in there. Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
So, the hands-on guidance is communicating with, for example, your nervous system about the direction of release through the musculature. So there's an upward release through the neck. There's an upward release through the muscles of the spine that allows for so many other releases like the shoulders, the chest, armpits. I'd say without studying with an Alexander teacher, anybody that listens to this is going to try and force it.
Gotcha.
And then they're going to be like, how come I don't feel better?
Yeah, this makes me feel terrible. Well, get the training to help support that, that stuff, so you have that sense of what you need to be doing.
But you can do stuff like semi-supine, laying on your back.
Yes.
Which we did in the workshop in
the
retreat.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Semi-supine where you're laying on your back with your knees bent, and your elbows are wide and your hands are on your hips, and maybe a little bit of support underneath your skull, that lets gravity and the floor help you let go into length.
Huh.
So that's something that everybody can do now. They could even go on my website and see like where, how I have you set yourself up.
That's the constructive rest,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that was staggering. The opportunity. What is your website? So people can all put a link in there as well.
Awesome, but it's very easy. AlexanderTechniqueLA.com.
That is very easy.
Yeah.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. That, and I can't recommend that experience enough. Like that was something that really, of the variety of things that we did, it was one of the moments that when we got out of there, both Sherry and I were like, oh man, like if I ever need a nap in the middle of the day, like to take the 10, 15 minutes out to do that and feel completely refreshed and balanced.
Definitely.
You know?
I recommend you do it before an audition. Mm. I recommend you do it before a performance. If you warm up, do it before you warm up. Because you're letting go of so much unconscious interfering tension when you spend that time on your back with your knees up. And then you do your warm up and you're already loose and you're not fighting the unconscious tension pattern of the day.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's great. What, there's a big, because of video games, vocal stress, yelly sort of work that demands a certain level of tension in it.
Yeah.
Not necessarily technique or what, but what steps do you recommend for preparation for that kind of work and then in the middle of it, you know, like how do you protect yourself and stay loose throughout a 4-hour session?
Yeah. I would say this heightened awareness of your body, really coming into relationship to your body. So your voice isn't something that just comes out of your nose and your mouth.
Yeah.
Your voice is in your body. So if you have a really demanding session, I will say like standing with a broad stance. So you don't want to have a narrow stance with your legs and cross your legs. A lot of more women, I think, will cross their legs. But standing with a broad stance, letting the knees soften a little bit forward and let the pelvis soften a little bit back. It looks like a monkey. We call it monkey and Alexander technique, where the knees are slightly folded forward and the hips are slightly back. And like, if you're in the shape, you feel like a monkey.
Yeah. And you're not... we're both standing in monkey right now. Yeah. But we're not like... I'm not like sticking my butt way out. It's just kind of, it's not like tilting out,
yeah,
right?
You're not arching your back.
It's just resting and holding like I'm riding in a saddle.
Yeah. And you have a broadened stance so that you don't lock your knees, grip the floor with your feet, lock up your tush, because all of that pulls on your diaphragm. And it locks up your diaphragm. So if you need to have big sound, you need to have support. And your legs are the support system for your voice. A lot of people talk about support as something in the abdominal wall. The abdominal wall needs to move.
Yeah.
It cannot be clenched. The abdominal wall, especially with big sound, the whole circumference of the abdominal wall, the low back, the sides of the ribs, need to move freely and easily to support big sound. And big sound resonates in your back.
Yes, it does. I can't, like, it was having that awareness and then doing something where I had to do that really underlined the truth of that. And that idea of the legs as the support system for your voice and your breath was really, really, I don't know, I'm still processing it.
Yeah. If you think of like the Eiffel Tower or the pyramids in Egypt, there are structures that have been in existence for so long. It's that slightly, you know, triangular structure.
Yeah.
We have that in our own bodies, and when we let ourselves utilize it, then you're not trying to hold yourself up with your neck, your shoulders, your back, and all of that can move with the sound that you're making. Your body moves when you produce sound. It's not frozen.
We've cultured that out of ourselves, haven't we?
I have so much to say about that.
Like what?
Well, this whole idea of sucking your gut, you know, you need to lose weight, making yourself smaller for women, definitely crossing the legs, shrinking the body, or for guys who are actually bigger guys, they tend to shrink themselves also. So like, oh, I don't want to be a threat. And I talk about like living in your natural born body, your natural born height. And when you let yourself have that space, movement is easy. You have less nerves, less anxiety, a bigger, fuller, more resonant voice.
Yeah,
we have definitely cultured our embodiment out of ourselves where we're trying to shrink our bodies instead of take up space.
It's like we've culturally decided that confidence is threatening. You know?
Yeah.
But then the people who succeed or go the farthest are the ones who are the most confident. So it's kind of like, stop being so confident. Stop it. You're threatening the pack.
Yeah. But it's not even that verbal.
Huh.
It's non-verbal, stop being confident. No one's actually saying that to anybody. Yeah. It's so non-verbal. It's so like... more like a look or shunning someone. But when we start to come into our bodies, it's easier to breathe, it's easier to heal, it's easier to connect with other people. And then, you know, we can resonate with each other now.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, I'm amazed by just the, you know, your openness as as a teacher, but as a person, like, all of our communication has just been open and direct and clear, and your face is always open, and your posture is, and, like, it's affecting in a way because you're surrounded by so many guarded people so often. And because what we do, and in particular in this city, and certainly in the industry that we're working within, that this idea of you have to protect yourself, you have to protect yourself, and the vulnerability that comes from being open. But the vulnerability that you bring to your openness is the vulnerability that you want in your characters. So it becomes this sort of, how do you protect yourself? Do you feel I'm strong enough, so I don't need to put on an armor? Or am I reacting to cultural expectation?
I never think, I'm strong enough, so I need to protect myself.
Me neither. Walking around like I'm a thug, you know.
I mean, I think now I've been a teacher now for over 16 years. Uh-huh. And I really have a deep and intimate relationship with my own body and my nervous system. And I've trained myself to listen to my body and my nervous system. And my body will say, go to sleep, and I go to sleep. My body will say, I'm hungry, and I eat. My body will say, you need to not be around that person anymore, and I will stop being around that person. And I've also learned, like, when I'm gentle and kind and honest, that's how I get what I want. But also, people don't mess with me. And I feel the benefit. I'm so passionate about my work because I can get hurt and then heal myself really quickly. Hmm. I can get sick and heal myself really quickly. And I just also see the benefit of this work with my clients, especially my performer clients who are going into big auditions and they're nervous about it, and then they have an experience here like, oh, if I leave my jaw alone, I let my jaw rest and allow my mouth to be a little bit open, then it's so much easier to handle the demands of the moment in the audition. You know, I had one person that took one session with me and then auditioned for True Blood, and she said it was so impactful and she got cast.
Oh my gosh.
So this connection to my body and listening to my body is what protects me. But it's not a tough protection. It's warm, you know? I build relationships, and I think if I'm warm, that builds the kind of relationship I want.
Yeah, yeah. It's that you can be soft and strong.
Yeah.
And you don't have to have rigidity for strength. Rigidity, if anything, is just, it's like, I was just watching 300 the other day. Like, it's just shield.
Yeah.
But there's no, but what?
And a lot of jaw clenching.
Yes. But the real strength is not the shield. The real strength is the Spartan behind it.
Yeah.
And being open to be the Spartan.
Yeah.
Rather than blocking.
Yeah. And I would say from my perspective that a deeper internal awareness of our own bodies. So I learned this word this year, interoception.
Introception.
Interoception.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interoception is an awareness or perception of the internal states of your body. And we're losing that. We're like out there with our phones and everything. And when we develop an internal state, an internal awareness of the states of our body's communicating with us and telling us, no, not that.
Hmm.
And then, with that awareness, like, oh, I'm holding my breath, I can let breath out. I can take the armor off so I can show up for the audition, the performance, the interview, and just let her rip, like, let my truth come out.
Well, it's like you're talking about, like, learning what your habits are, right? And that's a big part of that, is, like, identifying those things.
Yeah.
that we just accept as, well, I have no power over that.
It's not even that. Hmm. People don't know what they're doing. They have no idea. They come to sessions with me and they're like, I had no idea that I was, you know, compressing my gut and then trying to breathe deeply from there, which you can't. People don't know what they're doing with their body. And then when they start to discover, like, oh, I do not need to tighten my glutes and tuck my butt under to have good posture, that's actually hurting me. It's a huge relief emotionally and physically.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so fascinating because it is like such a relaxed and open state. And after having some time away from it, I keep reminding myself of what, like, I'm so relaxed, I can't be sitting properly. You know? Because there's that, because I've been cultured to believe that there's a certain way that you present yourself. It's that straight, slow, small, like, ergonomic, like, this is the chair that is supposed to relax you, so sit in it, and this is the posture you need, according to Staples.
We are living in moving bodies. We are living in bodies with backs that move with our breath. Your back breathes, your back moves with your breath, and in fact, you know, our whole spine spirals and twists all the time. So free expression for actors, for performers, for voice artists, free expression is that movement and expression of the back as well. So if you're like standing up straight and locking your body to stand up straight, you lose a lot of expression.
Yeah.
I'll tell my clients, like, you're an actor in your back. Your kiss in your back. It's not just about the face.
Yeah. Oh man, that's huge. That's such a huge awareness. And it's
literally huge.
Yeah.
Physically huge. Your back is huge.
Yeah. And like to accept it.
Yeah.
Accept your size.
Yeah.
And if you put limitations on that or allow others to put those limitations, it restricts how big you can be, how small you can be, how intimate you can be, how open, certainly. I mean, all those things that undermine, you can go through all of the, you can have all the training in the world, but if you don't have the state of body to execute the fullness of that training, you're lost.
Yeah.
Or you're unleashed.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely held back.
Yeah.
Definitely held back. Your diaphragm is not only the primary muscle of respiration, but is also the primary muscle of emotion. Hmm. So when there's a heightened awareness of, let's say, the ridge of the ribs, that ridge, wherever you have ridge of rib, you have diaphragm. Your diaphragm is huge. And when you let your body release and take up space so that your skeleton can support you, your diaphragm can move freely and easily, and then you have access to the areas of your emotional life that feel scary and that you, the human being, don't want to go to, but your characters need to go to, it's the freedom of your diaphragm. It's not something, I'm gonna own this. It's not something that's happening in your head. If you're having a problem with emotional expression, it's a freedom, it's a physical mobility of the diaphragm.
Yeah. It's so true. If you can't cry in a scene or something like that, it's not that you're not necessarily doing the head work. It's a physical condition.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm just going to like really encourage your listeners to come into an awareness of like lower into the body. Your primary muscle of respiration is your diaphragm, but it's also the primary muscle of emotion.
That's heavy, man. So, well, how can people find you? How can people study with you? Do you know, I've got people who listen who are in LA, who are LA based, and people who are all over the country. And I don't know that I have anyone internationally, but who knows? But how,
maybe now.
But maybe now. How can people study with you or find someone in their community who does Alexander Technique? What's the best way to find someone?
So in Los Angeles, my website is alexandertechniquela.com. Uh-huh. I'm also in Orange County, which is alexandertechniqueoc.com.
Sweet.
There are teachers all over the United States. There is a website, AMSATonline.org, if you're looking for an Alexander teacher outside of Southern California.
Uh-huh.
I'm also offering another retreat. So you went to retreat October 6th.
Yes.
I'm going to offer a New Year's retreat January 4th and 5th to really set the intention starting the year off from physical, emotional, and vocal confidence.
So on a retreat, like all the stuff that we've talked about here, but what can people expect? What would you say, you know, you're going to be experiencing by going through that?
So a deeper awareness of your own instrument. So when you have a clarified awareness of what you're doing unconsciously, and then learning how to gently, kindly, and slowly release out of those compressive, protective habits.
Yeah.
Some hands-on guidance, a lot of movement practices, so you experience the light looseness in your own skin.
Yeah.
Definitely in the second day, we're going to get into voice, and we didn't get too much into that into the workshop that you were at. In the second day, we're going to get into voice and the freedom of the voice and the power of the voice and how your voice can actually fill a room without working harder and working less.
Oh, man.
And it's all going to be in beautiful Laguna again.
That's so great. The beautiful studio. Just gorgeous. Well, a couple other things.
Yeah.
In my studio, I have a drummer's throne is what I use as my chair for recording. Mm-hmm. Like, does it matter what kind of a chair you have in your studio? Or would you, or like, some people will use, I've seen people using stability balls and stuff like that. Like, what's the best for long sitting and for seated vocal expression? What would you recommend?
I would recommend that whatever seating apparatus you use, you want your hips a little higher than your knees. So when your hips are a little bit higher than your knees, your hip flexors aren't gonna pull down on your spine.
Huh.
So your hips and your, you really want to be seated on your sits bones. So a lot of people, when they relax, they actually collapse back and tuck the pelvis under. And they're more seated on their tailbone. This isn't relaxed and it's going to interfere with your voice.
Yeah.
So you want to be seated on your sits bones where the pubic bone is aiming down and the abdominal wall is long. When your hips are higher than your knees, this uprightness of the pelvis is much easier.
Huh.
And then you're not pulling on your diaphragm. And then with both you and your wife, we talked about bringing the mic to your mouth.
Yeah, that was huge. Like if you don't have a really directional microphone, finding a way to get that much closer so you don't have to lean in.
You do not want to push your face forward to get to the mic because that bends the neck. But it also cuts you off at your waist where your diaphragm is. So sitting in such a way where your head and your ribs are right on top of your pelvis, the neck is soft and long, instead of having to push your face forward to get to the mic. Because I'm doing it right now, and I'm sure you can see my neck is bent, I'm bent at my waist.
Yeah.
And this makes breathing and vocalizing much harder.
Yeah.
So when you're seated in such a way that your head and your ribs are over your hips, now the ribs, the lungs, and the diaphragms can move more freely, and you're not interfering with the vibration at the vocal folds.
Oh, man.
And feet flat on the floor. You don't want to tuck your feet under. You don't want to cross your legs. Have that that foundation of your feet flat on the floor.
So it's almost like a tripod.
Yeah.
You know, your feet are there,
exactly.
And you've got yourself on your sits bones. And like, what, like the first day where you were like, well, the first day, we had my leg. But like still, it's like, sit back. It's okay to sit back.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm like, with my sits, I think I'm on my sits bones and sitting back without rolling my, that's it. But you move forward, you got on your sits bones, on your, you know, when you address the microphone, but you meet it. so that the mic comes to you. It's the same way in the studio where you stand behind the copy stand and they bring the microphone to you to create that circumstance at home.
Yeah. There is ideally a channel through your torso. There's a channel from, let's say, in between your ears. So if you put your pointer fingers right in front of the flap of your ears, if your pointer fingers could touch, that would be the top of the spine. So the top of the spine is not at the back of the neck and the back of the skull. And so there's a clear channel from the throat right in front of where your ears are all the way down into your lungs. So you're not bending that channel. And then the air just freely and easily moves past the vocal folds. And the sound is so much more powerful, but you're also working a lot less.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. What was the other question? I had another question about that. Studio. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. There's so much wonderful stuff that you shared.
We almost condensed the whole retreat into this podcast.
Into this experience. One other final question for you, because we know people can find it. What's something that you've seen or read or listen to as of late that's really inspired you? And it can be related to Alexander Technique or can completely not. What was something that really ignited your...
Well, this gentleman, his name is Gabor Mate.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a specialist in addiction and trauma. And he has a book, and it's actually an older book. I just know the title. I haven't even read the book.
Uh-huh.
The book is called When the Body Says No. Hmm. And every time I read a quote of his, you know, he talks about when there's illness, when there's addiction, when, you know, we go through these crises. And a lot of performers find me when they're in physical crises.
Huh.
It's all related to at some point when we left our bodies. We sort of disconnected from our bodies to try and handle a stressor, a trauma in our life. And this is really, I'm thinking about this all the time and noticing, like, when have I escaped my body? And then, okay, how can I come back into my body and really be present to my own body? And with my clients, I see it all the time. They sort of get lost. They're telling me some story and they're no longer in their body in the room with me. And I'm like, okay, come back into the room. Let your breath move you. So Gabor Mate, When the Body Says No, he also has other books too, but he's someone that's really inspiring me right now. And I want to be a figure that is bringing us back into our bodies in this disembodied world that we're creating that's all about technology.
Yeah.
Technology's amazing, but we still need to live in our bodies.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. Gabor Mate.
Yeah.
I'm listening to Nick Cave's new album, Ghost Teen.
Oh, yeah.
Are you a Nick Cave person at all?
I know of him. I've heard his music. I've probably choreographed something back in my college days.
This album is like, his son died 10 years ago, I think, and maybe more, and this album feels like it's processing, and it's a hard listen, but it's really beautiful and very good.
Yeah.
Incredibly poetic and really, really rooted in a vulnerable place.
Yeah.
Where a lot of his music is super poetic and cool, but on the darker side, this is the opposite of that, and it's deeply moving. So.
Yeah. I did see the Peanut Butter Falcon recently.
Oh, how was that?
I loved it so much. It was so heartwarming, and it was, about this relationship that's formed from two very unlikely people, but there's just, talk about like a vulnerability and like a softening around the heart.
Yeah.
Like, I think we all need to, look at how are we protecting our hearts and how can we soften a little bit more.
Yeah.
So there is that connection to unlikely people around us.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's so true. Like by it feels like a contradiction. But it really isn't. The more you open yourself, the stronger, wider base you build for yourself, yeah. and the more people you're able to connect to in a different way.
Yeah. yeah. And then it's just a simple no. If someone caught you, like, no. Uh-uh. And it's that simple.
Yeah.
It's not anything more than that.
That's it. That's it. Oh, man. Sharon, thank you so much for opening up your studio and your time and your experience with me and with the audience. And this was delightful.
You're so welcome. Thank you as well. It's been so much fun. Oh, and I had a blast with you.
Me too. Thanks so much for listening. You can find Sharon on alexandertechniquela.com.
Yep.
Or alexandertechniqueoc.com.
Yep.
And or wherever good Alexander Technique is taught near you. Mm-hmm. I cannot recommend it enough. It's just one of those things that it's a great tool for your toolbox. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's a toolbox in itself. So check it out. All right. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
This has been All Over VoiceOver with Kiff VH. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please go to iTunes and give us a positive rating. It truly helps. Follow me on Twitter at Kiff VH or on Instagram at Kiff VH or on Vero at Kiff VH. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you soon. Claim victory and depart the field.
Werewolf?
There.